Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT 4, February 8th, 2022. I am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I already have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to know what I thought of the show. Granted, that is why we're here right now. If you want to join us, you can do that. Call in at 515-605-9345 or send us an email at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com, and we'll get you guys on the show. Let you know, let us know what you thought of the show, and we can certainly respond. Now, you might notice I'm the one talking tonight. It's not Kelly. We actually thought we were going to get the band back together tonight. We thought we were going to have all three of us here, but it's not. It is Kelly is not here tonight. However, I do have one of the normal idiots, Tom. Say hey.
Hey, yes, at Tom Staup on Twitter. And now you know where my priorities rest, because I told you guys, hey, sorry, I switched services. My new service doesn't have sci-fi. I didn't know that NXT and WWE was about to go over to sci-fi for 2 weeks, but sorry, too bad, can't do the podcast for a while. But then Mr. Wade Keller said, hey, I need you on the Raw Post show. And I was like, well, I'll figure something out for you, Wade.
I see how it is, man. I see how it is. You know what? I might just mute you for the rest of the show. No, I'm kidding. I don't think I can even mute you for the rest of the show. All right. So we had an episode of NXT tonight on sci-fi, as Tom just pointed out. We're going to be on sci-fi next week as well. I'm saying we as in, like, I have anything to do with, you know, the involvement of NXT and what network they're going to be broadcasting on or whatever. But we'll be on sci-fi next week as well. We had a main event here tonight for the NXT Women's Championship. We had Kaylee Ray versus Mandy Rose. Of course, Mandy Rose going over. I don't have Kelly's report up at the moment, so I don't have the time, but I can get that for you in a minute. We did have Kaylee Ray lose tonight after some interference from Toxic Attraction, who were supposedly kicked out of the building after an altercation backstage with, why am I blanking on that? Tom, help me out.
Persia Parada and Indy Hartwell.
And Indy Hartwell, thank you. The four of them were supposedly kicked out of the arena, and we were told that during this match with Mandy Rose versus Kaylee Ray from backstage, Mackenzie Mitchell did, you know, like one of those backstage reports, just heard a voice, didn't even see a talking head to let us know that all of them were ejected from the building. Of course, a little bit of foreshadowing, because we did see Toxic Attraction come and, like I said, interfere in the match. Kaylee Ray was getting beat down by all the members of Toxic Attraction when Io Shirai came out to make the save. Now, earlier in the night, as we also saw Io Shirai and Zoe Stark talking backstage. Apparently, the two of them still exist in NXT, and they are still existent as a team. However, Zoe Stark is still injured with the knee injury. At least that's what they're still playing on TV. I don't know actually what her status is right now, but on TV, she's still wearing the knee brace, and she was telling Io Shirai that she's going to need to find another tag team partner for the Dusty Classic. Io Shirai said she knew exactly who it was, and then she came out later on tonight to make the save here. So my gut instinct is that we're going to wind up seeing Kaylee Ray and Io Shirai in the Dusty Classic. Tom, what's your gut instinct?
Yeah, I mean, that was the obvious end point here. Silly old me, I was not thinking about Kaylee Ray, because they had successfully diverted me into thinking, oh, no, she's involved in something else right now. So when Zoe said, you're going to need someone who's a little crazy, and Io said, I know exactly the person, my mind went to Kairi Sane, and I know that's not going to happen, but they sure made me want it. Granted, when I think about it, I want just about every single wrestler to be Kairi Sane if I had the choice to flip them. But you know, Kairi's doing the tease thing again. She's done this before. I believe the most recent time before this was with the opening of her new gym, but she did post an hourglass, and just an hourglass, on Twitter, and it's just like, oh boy, what's next? But But yeah, EO made me want that until what I should have seen coming as the obvious end point. As for the match, I'll just say probably the same thing I say about every Mandy Rose match on NXT 2.0. People don't want to give Mandy the credit that I feel she's earning. And I want to say I get it. I also want to say open your eyes. This is reminding me, not to the same level, but this is reminding me of Nikki Bella in 2015, when I, just speaking for myself, had preconceived notions about what Nikki Bella brought to the table, and then she became one of my favorite wrestlers at the time by the consistent performances she was putting on. And Mandy has yet to have a poor match since returning to NXT. She is very consistent. I find her matches exciting and engaging. And this was another one.
You know, I kind of have to agree here. You know, Mandy Rose, she does get a lot of hate. Some of it, I think, is deserved, you know, especially with some of she's not really as, or at least wasn't as developed as she probably should have been to be on the main roster and in the spot that she was. But no, I agree. I think she has done a much better job than I would have ever thought she possible for her in NXT in the position that she's been put in, not just as NXT Women's Champion, but as a leader of a faction. She's certainly not the best by any stretch of the imagination, but she's absolutely holding her own. I agree. I think we've certainly need to give her credit where credit's due. Kelly may disagree with us there, but I personally, that's kind of what I've been seeing. I mean, I think this might have even been her best NXT Women's Championship match so far. I mean, she hasn't had many, and she's been in the ring obviously quite a few times. But this, I got into this match. You know, Kaylee Ray, actually right before the match started, Kelly, Tom, Bruce, and I have a Twitter chat going between the four of us. And one thing Kelly said was, "Let's see if Kaylee Ray is a miracle worker." And you know, I even put that in my hits and misses report as well. And I wouldn't say Kaylee Ray is necessarily a miracle worker, but damn close. I think this was a really good match. Kaylee Ray as champion. I would have personally loved to see that. I mean, who's going to be more credible right now in the NXT women's division? I have the list of wrestlers up on the screen right now in the female women's division in NXT, and it's a short list, first off. But secondly, like, I didn't really see anybody else in this list that could potentially be a partner with Io Shirai. You know, and I'll be honest, Kaylee Ray didn't occur to me either. Because they had her in this thing with Mandy Rose, she was kind of, you know, out of sight, out of mind, if you will, right? But I had no idea who they were going to, you know, put in that spot. I was thinking maybe they were going to call somebody up, or, you know, call somebody up from developmental or whatever. Kairi Sane didn't even cross my mind, but damn, that would have been awesome. But yeah, overall, this whole segment, the match itself was okay. But I really did like the post-match angle. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Io Shirai and Kaylee Ray as a team together. I want to see how they work together, how they coexist together. And personally, I'd love to see the two of them, you know, walk away with the Dusty Cup. Right now, I think they're two of my favorites in the women's division. Maybe right behind Candice LeRae, but she's not going to be around for a while. So, you know, after this pregnancy and all of that. So, looking forward to see what these guys do. So, with that said, let us go over to the phone lines, and we're going to go to 814, which I believe is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, say hey.
Hello.
And what did you think of the show tonight?
It was a pretty good show.
Excellent, excellent. So what do you got for us?
Okay, my first question is on Dolph Ziggler. How long do you see him staying in NXT? Is it be just for a couple of matches, do you think, or do you think it's be he's in there for most of 2022?
You know, I had the thought myself personally. I just kind of think it's going to be a cameo type of appearance. You know, he'll be in a match, maybe two, on an NXT, but I feel like it's probably going to be like a kind of like AJ Styles. I mean, he showed up at Rizzo, you know, just for a cup of coffee. But I have a feeling that's probably what we're going to wind up seeing. Tom will probably talk a bit more about it, you know, since he's going through 8 years back and all of that. But, you know, back then there were always, you know, bigger stars that would show up on the main roster. We've talked about it, you know, a couple weeks ago too, when AJ Styles did show up. But, you know, back then when it was a fully developmental territory, they would have, you know, the, like, CM Punk, Cena for, those are the only two that are coming to my head off the top of my head, but yeah, they would have the stars from the main roster come and kind of rub elbows with the developmental team. And I feel like that's kind of what they're doing again here, you know, with AJ Styles and now with Dolph Ziggler. I don't see it being a long-term thing. I think it's probably going to be, unless I missed something on the main roster where him and Rude broke up. I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing. Tom?
Yeah, throw a dartboard at the notable names from 8 years ago, and there is a good chance that they made an NXT appearance, although in most of those cases, it was just for one taping, which would often amount to multiple episodes. So now the workload is a little bit more demanding since they're only doing one live episode at a time. Dolph Ziggler's appearance then was defeating Rusev. I believe before Rusev was associated with Lana, that was, I think we covered that back in August, is when that was, if anybody wants to go see what we said about it. But yeah, at the time, Dolph was a bigger star than he is now, and Dolph hasn't felt like a star in years and years. I mean, even... I think the last somewhat major thing I remember him doing was the feud, the 1 month long feud with Dean Ambrose over the WWE title, which was probably at least 4 years ago now.
He had that random one off with Goldberg a couple years ago, but yeah, even that didn't really seem like that. Just seemed like they were feeding somebody to Goldberg.
Yeah, it was somebody who can take a spear really well. Yeah. Oh, and he was great at that. I now that you mention it, I do remember him getting back up and demanding more. But yeah, just a top level program. And I mentioned that specifically just because even at the time, I was just like, okay, I was leaping off my couch when Dolph cashed in. But really, are we going back to this now? No, this can't be Dean's feud for a month here. But boy, you take that guy and you put him in a smaller room and he feels like a big star again. And yeah, sure, the crowd reaction helped. And the crowd reaction then quickly devolved into all these guys mode. And with that crowd, there's nothing these wrestlers can do to change it, no matter how adept they are with crowd psychology. But Dolph came off like a big star. It was really nice, honestly, nice to see. Because, I don't know, talking about Dolph is its own podcast series, but he's a guy that I think, you know, everybody sees something in, and yet we all just sort of roll our eyes when his music hits on the main roster because he never does anything anymore and hasn't for a long time. But yeah, I enjoyed this for that. Beyond that, I wasn't huge on the segment overall. I think the highlight was when someone finally said it, when Ziggler looked at Ciampa and was just like, dude, it's the same few hundred Florida people that come out to cheer you no matter what you do. And I'm like, yes, finally someone said it.
I was going to say, I was wondering what your reaction to that was going to be, because like in a way I had the same reaction. I was like, yes, somebody finally said it.
Yeah.
And then at the same time I go, is that really something you want to be saying about the product too? Like, do you really want to point out the fact that, like, you know, it is this small show and whatever, but yeah, no, I thought honestly, like I thought it was great.
And I'm trying to read into Ciampa's reaction. Of course he's, you know, going to try to stay in character, but I'm like, is there a part of you that acknowledges that, Ciampa? Are you feeling that too? Yeah, and of course, you know, Ziggler, like I said, nothing any of these guys could do to get the crowd out of all these guys' mode, but Ziggler, I'll give that one to him on the level you're talking about, just because he's just trying to get, it's his job to get booed in this situation. And as far as how many matches I think, or you know, what his stint will be, I think that we're looking at a tag match and then a singles match. So I think he'll do two.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking as well. Yeah, maybe we'll see him team with Escobar against Ciampa and Breaker or something like that, and then have a singles match probably against Breaker for the title. This is at least what I'm thinking. But I think this was actually kind of refreshing. Normally I don't like these angles where you get two guys in the ring and then you get somebody else comes out and they're like, nope, the title's mine. And then you get somebody else and comes out, nope, the title's mine. You know, we see that all the time. And it was kind of like that here. I mean, it was kind of, similar. You know, obviously we start with this NXT title summit between Escobar and Bron Breakker, and then, Ziggler comes out, and then Ciampa comes out. But because they did it a little bit different, and I think the surprise factor of seeing Dolph Ziggler in NXT, it didn't feel like the same old stuff. You know what I mean? It did feel different. I think Ziggler absolutely killed it tonight on the mic. I mean, he's amazing on the mic anyway, but I feel like he either he took whatever was written for him and he like made it sound like it was coming out of his mouth, or they gave him some leeway to like talk how he wanted to talk, come up and say what he wanted to say or whatever. You could probably give him bullet points or something like that, but his promo came off incredibly genuine. He sounded genuine. He didn't sound like he was reading off a script. Neither did Ciampa for that matter, or Escobar to a point, but that could also be a language thing. Breakker, well, he's a Steiner, so those promos are going to be those promos. But I think Ziggler like absolutely killed it tonight. And I really am actually looking forward to see what he does here. He hasn't felt like a star in a really long time. He's not somebody that I've really gravitated towards, but it is interesting to see a bigger main roster star back here in the developmental territory of NXT 2.0. So it's intriguing. You know, the same thing with AJ Styles showing up. I'm a much bigger AJ Styles fan than I am with Dolph Ziggler, but it was like, oh God, AJ Styles here. Like, this is great. Like, what's going to happen? It's kind of the same thing here with Dolph Ziggler. So, overall, I gave this segment a thumbs up. And I'm really curious to see, how they utilize Dolph Ziggler. Most likely, we're kind of talking, tag match and singles match, something like that. But I'd also like, maybe see him get back on the mic and run somebody down or build somebody up or whatever. But, I think that would certainly add to, add some entertainment value to this 2-hour product that can sometimes be a little bit devoid of entertainment value. Ryan, what else do you got for us tonight?
I had a question on Joe Gacy. Do you see him expanding his stable with him looking at Draco Anthony, or do you think he's just going to stay with Harlan for now?
Oh, okay. Joe Gacy. Okay. I missed the name. At first when Joe Gacy kind of first debuted, even before, I think it might have even been before Harlan showed up. But when Joe Gacy kind of first started this character in NXT 2.0, I remember saying to myself, like, I could see him almost going the way of Bray Wyatt and forming a little bit of a stable and having some followers and things like that. Not exactly like Bray Wyatt, but that character certainly screams cult leader, right? Right now, I have a feeling it's probably just going to be the two of them, Harlan and Joe Gacy. But I think if they were to find the right person to add to that stable, that they could certainly do that. I feel like Joe Gacy, if they wanted to really run with Joe Gacy and make him, kind of a bigger deal than he is right now, because, he's really just a mid-carder. But they wanted to make him a big, bit of a bigger deal. Yeah, give him another big heater behind him or something like that. Maybe go the way of like, Ivy Nile and Diamond Mine and, get a woman in there and or something like that, kind of mix it up a bit. I think at least for the short term, it's going to be the two of them. I don't see them adding anybody else right now. The potential, you know, Draco Anthony, while I like the guy and what he's doing right now, you know, we can certainly talk on the match too, if we want, while we're here. Draco Anthony, took on, where are my notes? Oh my God. I closed my notes. Thank you. He did. He took on Pete Dunne. We could certainly talk about that too while we're here. But Draco Anthony, to me, reminds me a lot of Carmelo Hayes when Carmelo Hayes first debuted for the breakout tournament before the 2.0 switch. And just because, like, I feel like they're both like this generic creator wrestler, they don't really – or well, at least Hayes back then. He's certainly evolved from that now. But, you know, just this kind of creator wrestler, generic babyface, but has the ability in the ring. And I kind of am curious to see how they wind up molding Draco Anthony, where that character goes. You know, with that little rub with Joe Gacy, like, yeah, potentially, but I don't necessarily think that's where it's going. Tom?
Yeah, I suppose there's always potential for that kind of thing. And I do admit that I didn't really pick up on what Joe Gacy was putting down here. I'm sure it was as straightforward as that character gets, but I just, you know, I sort of like, I blinked and I missed the segment. So I confess that much, but it's hard for me to picture it being building to too much more than just like Harland running through Draco in a squash match either next week or the week after. Assuming, you know, last time they did one of these named specials on TV, it did feel more takeover-ish, and they didn't have as much fat on it, so they might not do something like that on Vengeance Day. But, you know, that's where I see it going at this point. It doesn't seem like Draco is positioned as anything other than where, like, Guru Raj or Dante Chen are right now, and that's fine. You can grow from there. We've seen other people do the exact same thing. As for the match, it was perfectly fine. It was a Pete Dunne match. I say that in a much more complimentary way than I say, like, oh, it was a Finn Balor match. Pete Dunne doesn't bore me to that level. His matches aren't all the same like Balor's are, but there's a reason why Balor comes to mind, because Pete Dunne just always kind of is in the same lane. And so the only thing to really look at here was Tony D'Angelo's interference, which totally made Tony D'Angelo look like an ineffective schlub. Like, okay, maybe this is the week for him to show ass. That's fine. But he just looked like a schlub. The way that Dunne just schooled him twice in a row, and D'Angelo never had a shred of a chance at getting anything over on him, and he's wearing that. I mean, the guy looks like, he looks like you're in a side-scroller beat-em-up, and he's one of the first enemies that you fight on the first level. He doesn't even look like, you know, Don Corleone's fourth son or anything like that. So
he's the Goomba in the first level of Super Mario.
Exactly. Like, you really have to not be paying attention to lose to that Goomba.
Absolutely. I kind of felt the same way. I mean, I personally, I actually enjoyed the match. I mean, I'm not saying that you necessarily didn't, but I hear what you're saying. You know, it's a Pete Dunne match, kind of gets in his lane and whatever. I did like it. You know, it was a bit of a slower match than we're used to. Pete Dunne, you obviously work in the joints, and you're both Anthony and Dunne, you know, trying to break each other's fingers and things like that. So there was some cool stuff in the match and some cool storytelling. But yeah, I mean, it did. It just kind of felt like a normal, you know, Pete Dunne match. Certainly wasn't bad. But really, yeah, all of it was kind of just to get to that angle with Tony D'Angelo. And I completely agree. He looked like an idiot. He looked like an absolute moron. So I'm curious to see what happens with this weaponized cage match. I think it is kind of cool that, you know, this whole feud started at War Games in a cage, and they're, you know, going to blow it off, presumably blow it off, you know, in a cage. I have a feeling that this weaponized cage match might feel something like Oh, we keep bringing up Dean Ambrose tonight, which is weird.
I was thinking the same
not
thing.
Even, that's not even his name anymore. But the Ambrose Asylum match that that he had with Jericho, I hope it's not the same thing because that really did not turn out well. But I'm you
nobody
know,
liked I've, that one. I enjoyed that one. I it's been so long since I've seen it, I wouldn't be able to tell you why. But actually, you know what? No, I can tell you why. Because I felt like they stayed true to the storyline. I thought it was good. It was a good storyline feud, and they kept with the themes, and they kept with I don't know. It worked for me, and of course, whatever he called his fake plant was
Mitch.
Was amusing. What Mitch? Yes, Mitch. The plant. Yeah,
I
loved Mitch.
Yeah, I got a buddy named
69 Thumbtacks.
Yeah, 69.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got a buddy named Mitch, so that one always sticks out. But and then yeah, the 69 Thumbtack story. If you guys haven't ever seen Chris Jericho tell that story on the YouTube channel Inside the Ropes, look it up because it's hilarious. He's also told it on his podcast, but I like the way he tells it on Inside the Ropes because it's in front of a live crowd and he kind of shows it up a little, hams it up a bit in typical Jericho fashion. But I don't know how the hell. Oh yeah, we'll be talking about the Ambrose Asylum match. That's right. I'm kind of curious to see how this weaponized cage match turns out. Are they going to wind up hanging the weapons from the top of the cage, kind of like they did with actually above the top of the cage, like they did in the Ambrose Asylum match? Are they just going to fill the ring with weapons? It's interesting. I think it's probably a little overkill, but hey, whatever. Especially when you've got WWE, calling out AEW for gore and stuff. I don't think they're necessarily going to be getting blood or anything in this match, unless it's obviously hard way. But it's just kind of funny to me. They're like, yes, let's add all these weapons into a cage. And it's like, oh, AEW is so gory. But whatever. That's just my opinion anyway. Ryan,
I'm
what
just,
else? You got?
I'm just going Oops. To let people imagine what my comment is here.
Yeah, right. Ryan, what else do you have for us tonight?
My question's on the Dusty Classic tournament. Since there's only one trophy, as the end door would be like a storyline where the winning team fights over the trophy.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Since I only see like one trophy for this Dusty Classic, do you think there would be like a storyline where the winning team fights over the trophy?
Are you talking like the winning teams between the men and the women?
Like, as far as I know, it looks like they only get one, trophy, from teams.
I pick up what you're putting down. Okay. I don't know. I'd love to actually see that though. Cause you end up getting a tag team, an established tag team that wins the Dusty Classic, and then they start fighting over the trophy, and that could kind of come into a feud between those two people. We haven't seen that yet with the Dusty Classic. I think they could certainly use that as an angle. I don't know if it's necessarily the best angle in the world, but I could certainly see that angle working if done correctly. Whether or not they do it here this year, I don't know. MSK versus Creed Brothers should be interesting. I am kind of looking forward to that, even though I'm not massive MSK fans, but I really like the Creed Brothers. So I'm kind of curious to see, how that winds up playing out. But in terms of the question, Tom, what do you think?
What did I think of both of these matches? For one of them, my only note is match was okay. And for the other one, Doc Bruce, when I was on 2 weeks ago, did a very good job of making me believe Blade and Inoue had a chance. But, they weren't going to do all of those shaman vignettes to not have MSK in the finals. So, as much as they wanted us to believe the brackets were busted, this is the finals that everybody who bothered to think about the brackets predicted. Good for the Creed Brothers and getting their names on that trophy. And speaking of names on the trophy, that's where, I don't know, I mean, they could try to force something awkwardly, but I don't think this particular trophy lends itself to that sort of angle because it's the kind of trophy where there is only one. and when you win, you get your name etched in it. It's do they do that? They probably don't do that with the Stanley Cup. There's only one Stanley Cup, and the team gets it for the year. But this is like, I don't know, the big year-end race at the racetrack I work at is called the Governor's Cup, and the Governor's Cup is literally a trophy that you get your name etched in the side of it when you win. So you don't keep the trophy. It stays displayed at the racetrack with all of the names of the winners. And I believe that is the same concept. That is the same concept as with the Dusty Cup. And I think, yeah, when I did go to the Performance Center for that show, that the last WWE event that I went to before lockdowns, the Performance Center show that they did, I saw the Dusty Cup on display. They had it nearby, and that was not at the time of year that they were still – no, it was mid-March, so they wouldn't have still been doing – I'd have to look at a calendar. I ramble on. But, yeah, I guess now what I'm trying to remember is that in the breakups that we've had coming out of Dusty Tournament winners like Balor and Joe, was there ever – And I tried to do like a quick Google image search and I didn't find anything, but was there ever a moment where, say, Samoa Joe threw the trophy on the ground and they had two and one of them was a less expensive breakable one for TV, but I don't specifically recall.
Yeah, I don't either off the top of my head. I don't think that was I don't think they did that anyway.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Ryan, you get anything else for us tonight?
My final question is on why do you think it is that the women wrestlers in NXT are able to main event WrestleMania, but say for none of the men have been able to main event WrestleMania, such as like Bianca Belair, you know, and I believe Sasha Banks came from NXT and Bayley. But I don't believe there's been like a man because I think Roman came from FCW.
I mean, I'd have to actually look at the last few WrestleMania main events to see, but I don't have a good answer there necessarily. My gut reaction is just the fact that like they, so actually, okay, I guess this is kind of at least what I'm thinking here. So right now we have a pretty, I don't want to say a terrible women's division in NXT, but it's certainly a far, far fall from grace from where we were even just 1 year ago. The women's division in NXT for years was incredible and they were producing incredible talent. You know, they whether they were homegrown or they, you know, they came in, you know, from the indies and went through the NXT system to the main roster. But, you know, like Sasha Banks did, for example. So I think the caliber of NXT graduate, if you will, to the main roster back then from the women's division is vastly different than what we have, you know, now. But it was also a completely different level than like the men's division was, right? We certainly had a great level of competition in the men's division, but I think they see Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, as the, you know, the main eventers and the money draws, right? You know, not necessarily somebody like, I'm going to pull out Kevin Owens because he's, you know, somebody came from NXT or Sami Zayn or somebody like that. They kind of see the, and, you know, Roman Reigns technically did come from NXT, I guess, but at least that's kind of like my thought is just the caliber of the women that were coming out of NXT at the time were higher than the caliber of the men, and they already had those established stars to go ahead and main event WrestleMania to make those shows more of a draw. Tom, does it sound like I'm talking out of my ass, or does it sound like I'm making sense?
No, it makes sense. I did miss the crux of the question. Is it whom among the current roster could believably main event a WrestleMania, or why have we not seen anyone main event a WrestleMania from NXT women's divisions of late?
My question was just geared towards, is this show like better at producing like women's stars than men's stars? Because it seems like most of the stars that come out of NXT have been female and not male stars to me.
Okay, so I did completely whiff on the question. Yeah, no, I guess the answer that comes to my mind is a much more general issue of that was very recently exemplified in the Royal Rumble or on the Royal Rumble pay-per-view, where neither Rumble was particularly good, but the men's Rumble was just a meat grinder. They, you know, and there are other things to blame for that, but it really just felt like for as positive as I am on each guy individual to individual, it was just like almost every single time the music hit, you know, Sheamus comes out. I like Sheamus. I like seeing him in singles matches, and then seeing him in the Royal Rumble, it's just like, it's just another dude out there. And that's just one person who comes to mind, because I think he made his entrance around the time that I was formulating that thought, so that's why that sticks out. But you could say that across the board, whereas in the Women's Rumble, which was better than the Men's Rumble, but not by much, there were still so many individual personalities, and it felt like people were really trying to, even in brief little bits of time, get over character, and they were putting so much effort into what they were, the production of what they were wearing and how they were portraying themselves. And I think that's something that's really shown itself over the past few years. And yes, absolutely, notably in NXT, and particularly at the heights of the women's division from the four horsewomen, and then the era of Baszler and Rhea Ripley, those heights. I threw myself off with that horrible mix-up of the consonants there, but I think it's a more general thing. And I don't know, looking up and down the roster, I mean, I currently, I know this isn't what you're asking, but since my mind was there, there's nobody. I mean, like Nate said, the main event of WrestleMania is such an exclusive place where now we're looking at Roman and Brock facing each other there for a third time. Austin and Rock were there three times. Hogan and Roman have been there over and over and over. Cena, although Cena not as many times as we accuse him of. Anyway, different conversation. But it's just so exclusive. And there's only one person I see on the current women's roster who I think has that potential. And that's not because I don't like other people. It's just because it's so very exclusive, and also probably favored by the fact that everything that I've seen from this performer so far has been positive and seems to also fit the mold of what WWE looks for in that spot. That is Tiffany Stratton. Of course, there's way, way more that we need to see from her, and there are journeys she needs to go on. But I don't know. I think it's a very good point, Ryan, and I think... I don't know if my answer did anything for you, because I'm not speaking NXT specific, but I've noticed the same thing just in general across the wrestling world.
Yeah, and I've got a list of WrestleMania main events pulled up here right now, and I'm looking at like WrestleMania 33 and on. Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, Undertaker. I think that kind of does play into it, where it is such an exclusive club, and they already have these established stars like Brock Lesnar. Drew McIntyre, he was in WrestleMania 36, beat Brock Lesnar. Beat Brock Lesnar for the title. So there's one, but I mean, granted, Drew McIntyre, I guess, is kind of a special case because he was already a WWE guy, went out on the indies, made a name for himself, came back, as a much bigger star when he did come back to WWE and NXT. But other than that, I mean, you get Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns as really the only NXT guys, NXT guys at all, really, other than Drew McIntyre. So yeah, I think that's kind of it. You know, they already have those established stars, so they're going to use them in the main event. That's who they think are going to draw the most money. It probably will draw the most money with the casual fans. You know, WrestleMania is a weird time because that's the time when a lot of casual fans tune in. So you want to have, or well, at least you think you'd want to have, you know, those stars that are going to draw the names. You know, Brock Lesnar is a household name at this point, or for the most part. A lot of people know who Brock Lesnar is. A lot of people know who Ronda Rousey is. So put those people, put them in the main event of WrestleMania. I'm not saying this WrestleMania, but although that's probably going to still happen. But you put them in the, you know, main event of WrestleMania, you're going to draw a little bit more money as opposed to taking, you know, kind of lesser known names from the NXT roster, or not, sorry, lesser known names that have gone through the NXT system into the main roster. You know, they're obviously not going to, probably not going to draw nearly as much unless WWE did their job and actually built stars. You know, they don't seem to be doing that very well. You know, with the men, with the women, I think it was a little bit easier simply because we started seeing just amazing talent coming, you know, coming through the women's division. But they didn't really have any major women stars at the time. You know, when the Four Horsewomen came in, you know, to the main roster anyway, yeah, you had Paige, and you know, she was huge. She was probably the biggest thing, your biggest woman star on the roster at the time anyway. But for the most part, like, there wasn't, the women's division was, I mean, still the Divas division, right? You know, it wasn't like looked at in the same light, and there wasn't those stars. They had to build stars. They didn't really have a choice if they wanted to start promoting, you know, women's wrestling in the way that they did. So I think it was probably easier for them to make stars in that respect because they didn't already have somebody in that spot to then put into a main event at WrestleMania. And hell, even then, they, I mean, granted, you know, we had Sasha and Bianca Belair last year, but the first time it was, you know, Ronda Rousey. She's not even an NXT. She's not even really, I mean, she's a wrestler now, but she made her name outside of the business. So, you know, but anyway, I think we've rambled on for a bit about that. So Ryan, do you have anything else for us, or shall we move on and touch on a few other things?
It's time to move on. Thanks for taking the call.
All right, Ryan. Thank you very much, as always. We'll talk to you again soon. All right. So let's come over here. Let's see. What haven't we talked about yet? We've talked a little bit about Creed Brothers and Grizzly Young Vets, as well as MSK and Nofe versus Blade. Let's go ahead and talk about Tiffany Stratton versus Wendy Chu. So, yeah, this is a match that happened on NXT. And that's about as much as I really want to talk about it. Man, like I said a little bit ago, what a fall from grace from the NXT women's division just, you know, a year ago. This match wasn't necessarily terrible, but I am really at a loss with this Wendy Chu character. I don't even want to call her Wendy Chu. I want to go back to calling her Karen Q or Mei Ying or something like that. This character is just god awful. I have to give Karen Q credit for actually trying her all and really putting like a solid effort into this character, but god, it is terrible. You know, from even the, you know, the backstage stuff to the ring, just a character that is obsessed with sleep is ridiculous. She's never going to win the WWE, or she's never going to win an NXT championship with that character. She's never going to get called up to the main roster with that character, unless Vince gets some weird hair across his ass and thinks like, oh my god, this is amazing and this is great, I could do something with this. She's never going to get called up to the main roster with that character. It is the only, you know, we were kind of joking about this off air. The only place we could actually see that gimmick actually working is like someplace like Chikara, where, you know, it's all kind of comedy wrestling and things like that. I could certainly see it working there. Hell, put her in a match against Jervis Cottonbelly and see if Jervis Cottonbelly could rock her to sleep, you know, something like that, right? But in terms of NXT, in WWE, this character is
absolutely abysmal. Tiffany Stratton, I'm like, as far as like the character goes, I'm not sold on it. I don't hate it. I don't love it. I see what they're kind of trying to go with, what they're trying to do here with the character. And I think she definitely shows some potential, but I find the character just grating and annoying personally. So this match in particular, I almost wanted to tune out. And I kind of, in a way, did tune out. I was, you know, typing the hits and misses, but there was nothing in this match that really grabbed me. All I could think of was, give me like Mia Yim versus Dakota Kai. Give me, you know, Candice LeRae versus Io Shirai. Why am I watching this? I understand we're back to being a developmental territory, but at the same time, it's just a little disappointing and disheartening to know, like, I say we as in, like, I'm still part of NXT. But, you know, NXT had the greatest women's division in all of professional wrestling, you know, as far as I'm concerned anyway, and now we're here. It's a real big fall from grace as far as I'm concerned, and this particular match just – Tom?
Yeah, my stated, I believe, yes, we did go into it. My stated forgiveness of the Wendy Chu character began to expire with her second match, the match against Amari Miller, when she introduced more sleep-themed moves that just, they no longer make sense in what is supposed to be a believable wrestling context. The character is just coming with a ceiling that is beneath NXT. I'm still personally conflicted because it is a character that I enjoy. Theoretically, we haven't seen enough from it yet, but it is a character that I want to give a leash to because I enjoy it, but it's just, you can't put this on a bigger level. I was even, you know, during the match tonight, I was chatting with my partner about it, and she is as casual a viewer as it gets. And even she made that same observation, like, oh, wow, you can't put this on a big stage. So even she saw that, as someone who only ever occasionally watches out of the corner of her eye and just picks favorites here and there. I just think, like, the crowd isn't even... The character would be more fun, and, you know, this is the sort of thing that they could try to teach during commercial breaks or during pre-shows, if the crowd isn't organically doing it themselves. But, like, if the crowd was shushing each other during her moves, or if the crowd was chanting for her, but they were doing it in a whisper so she could sleep, like, there's fun stuff that you can do as a crowd with this sort of character. But again, when I visualize that kind of thing, I visualize it in a rec center or a warehouse. Well, they are in a warehouse technically, but you know what I mean? It's an indie level character. On the other side of the ring, I already said, like, just about one of the most complimentary things you can say about somebody is that, you know, of the current roster, I feel that Tiffany Stratton is the one that shows WrestleMania main event potential, underlined, bold, italicized potential. But I just love what she's doing in there with just playing her character with every single move that she does. And as I've said before, I just always get a kick out of these stuck up, conceited characters, immature characters, multi-episode Daddy's Credit Card arc has amused me, even if Wade Barrett kind of didn't connect the wires at the end, where Chu had said that the card got canceled and then she threw it away, and then in the end Wade was like, Daddy's Credit Card is back where it belongs, and like, he had to get a new one. But anyway, I am very, very high on Stratton, and I believe I will continue to be. And, you know, since I already mentioned her, I'll just mention my partner again, since I already indicated she was watching this match. She also really sat up and took notice and made the same exact comparison that I have made with her moveset. I know there are visual elements of her character or her character. There are visual elements of her and her wardrobe that evoke Charlotte Flair as well, or, you know, pick your favorite tall blonde that has been in WWE. There are quite a few to choose from. The Charlotte connection that I made due to the approach to the integration of gymnastics in the ring was also something that she observed. So yeah, so it's being seen, at least in my household.
Yes, for sure. Tom, I'm going to throw back to you to talk about LA Knight versus Sangha real quick, because something is playing on my computer that sounds like a TV show, and I can't figure out where the hell this noise is coming from. So I'm going to throw back to
look
you.
Look for the little speaker icon.
I am, and I don't see one of those in a towel. Oh, hold on. I found it. I apparently paused my Sling TV after NXT had finished airing, and apparently it just started playing again. And I had it minimized. So, wow, that was weird. I just started hearing somebody talking about a sexy body, and I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Well,
anyway,
I'm sure it was Alan Tudyk on Resident Alien, everybody's new favorite TV show.
Alan, I'm trying to think of his name during the commercial, and I couldn't think of his name. Thank you for that. Anyway, Firefly, it was a great show. Yeah, Sangha versus LA Knight. So we had the two of them, Sangha's debut in the ring, if I'm not mistaken, versus LA Knight with Grayson Waller in the corner of Sangha here. We did see LA Knight go over, which kind of surprised me, at least in a little bit, in a way here, because I kind of figured where, you know, you get this big hulking monster here and he's, you know, kind of in a debut match, you'd figure he'd probably go over. He didn't lose clean. He lost, you know, due to some shenanigans from Grayson Waller taking the turnbuckle pad off, and then LA Knight using that to his advantage and securing the win. But I was kind of surprised actually just to see him lose. In a way, I mean, I think it makes sense to further the feud and the story between LA Knight. Actually, not in a way. It absolutely makes sense in that regard. But I was just kind of a little bit surprised that he ended up losing his debut. I feel like that may end up indicating where they view him on the card. You know, since he's debuting as a heater and he also lost. So I'm curious to see where Sangha lies on the card, you know, maybe like 3 months down the road, or even just a couple months down the road, whenever LA Knight and Grayson Waller kind of finish their feud. Hell, it could even be next week at Vengeance Day. Curious to see where Sangha necessarily goes from here. Cause like, I can't necessarily see him staying with Grayson Waller long-term, at least not right now. But at the same time, he does also, I can't see him standing on his own, you know, as his own act, unless they were able to give us a little bit more, kind of give us some more backstory or what have you. I really also wasn't super impressed with him in the ring. He was okay, but he certainly was no, you know, Keith Lee or Braun Strowman or something like that. He was okay, but, you know, I kind of felt like, streamed of like mid card to me. I don't know. What did you think about Sangha's performance here in this match?
So yeah, singles debut on NXT anyway, and man, it's a good thing that Braun Strowman apparently forgot to pick up one of his old outfits that he left at the PC, so old Sarov could have something to wear. It looked exactly like something Braun Strowman wore a lot.
This is the first time, or he hasn't wrestled as Sangha though, right? Like he's been in matches.
Exactly. Character. Yeah.
Right.
So
I can't remember him being in a tag as Sangha, but okay. I pick up what you're putting down.
Yeah. I have to force myself to wait and see on this, because to me, it really feels like the focus on the Sangha element feels like a stunting of the momentum that Waller already had in a very impressive push that he was getting and living up to. So I guess I should be relieved that Sangha lost, because that shows that they aren't just transitioning over to like, wow, look at this big dude, and that it still is about Waller. Yeah, I think beyond those meager statements, I'm just going to have to wait and see, because for a couple weeks there, it did feel like Waller's push had been diminished in favor of highlighting Sangha, which is not optimal.
I agree. Certainly not optimal. I also agree with the fact that it kind of feels like it's diminishing the Grayson Waller act a little bit. Because Grayson Waller, he's kind of like a little bit of a chicken shit heel, but at the same time, he's shown that he just, you know, can jump right in and you know, make an attack or whatever. Here now he's, you know, put on a restraining order against LA Knight, which he himself has broken, I think at least three times. But that's beside the point. And also, too, with the restraining order, you get that person arrested like that day. You don't go, next week he's going to be arrested. Like, that's dumb, but whatever. I suspend disbelief for a bit, I guess. I feel like Grayson Waller, he can easily stand on his own. He doesn't need a heater, especially somebody that is kind of an unknown, Sarov Sangha is here. I kind of wish that they kept with the momentum that he had, and didn't necessarily put him with somebody like this. I was really, really, really digging what he was doing, on his own. So, all right, let's go ahead. And I think we only have one more match that we haven't talked about, and that is Saray versus Dakota Kai. We did see Saray go over here, over Dakota Kai after, you know, a bit of back and forth. I can't say that I was surprised to see Saray go over here, but I really wanted to see Dakota Kai get a win. One of the things that, another segment that Dakota Kai was in, and then I'll kind of get into what I was going to talk about. We also saw Dakota Kai backstage with Wendy Chu a couple times, first going through all of her bags, all of the shopping bags that Wendy Chu and Amari Miller got with Tiffany Stratton's credit card. We saw her going through and kind of rifling through all of that. And then after her match, we saw Dakota Kai, you know, kind of licking her wounds, walking backstage, runs into Wendy Chu. And Wendy Chu says something, in fact, like, hey, it's not easy, is it? And then walks off. One of the things, I think it was Kelly that said in our group chat, was like, if this is where Dakota Kai is going to be, like, get out. Just move on and go somewhere else, right? Because she is so much better than what they're doing right now with her. The only thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that last segment with Wendy Chu, where Wendy Chu just really like talked down to her, right? And we're talking about how Wendy Chu is like the worst gimmick, in my opinion, in WWE, period. And now she's talking down to somebody like Dakota Kai. I'm kind of hoping that like this lights a fire under her ass and all of a sudden we see Dakota Kai just like blow up. I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. Fingers crossed it does, but I don't think so. I hate to say it, but I think I'm kind of at a point where I would either like to see Dakota Kai move up to the main roster, but I also don't think they're necessarily going to do her fairly on the main roster. I'm almost tempted to say move on and go to a different company. And actually I did say that in the hits and misses tonight, you know, go become AEW women's champion, go become, challenge Mickie James for the Impact title, something like that. But I feel like she is so much better than what they are utilizing her for right now. She jobbed to Saray this week, essentially. I mean, it wasn't necessarily a job, but you know what I mean? She lost to Saray. It looks like she may wind up in a match against Wendy Chu. Who knows, you know, at this trajectory, she might end up jobbing to Wendy Chu. What the hell is that? As far as the match itself went, it was a fun match. It was an entertaining match. They did a lot of picture in picture. Matter of fact, I believe this match, as well as, I think it was the Inoue and Blade versus MSK match, where the match actually started
in picture in picture, which is a little bit strange. Usually they'll start the match and go to picture in picture, but they started the picture in picture during entrances, and then the match started proper in a little window down in the corridor of my screen, which I'm not a fan of. I really hope that is not a thing that they keep doing. Maybe it was just a thing because they're on Sci-Fi this week and next week. But I would rather them start the match, maybe have a minute of the match or whatever, and then go to commercial. If you've got to, then, you know, just kind of start it while you're at commercial. It's you're not paying attention to the match. You're paying attention more to this giant commercial in front of you. But yeah, as far as Dakota Kai goes, I feel like they've done her dirty recently in NXT. Tom?
Yeah, she's hovered around, I mean, you know, with a title program here or there, she's hovered around this territory for quite a while now. And it really feels like just where they've had her slotted. So I was starting to wonder if she's done with storylines and she's just there to lose to other people now, until, what was she saying before Wendy Chu sipped her drink at her? It was, I feel like there's something that I'm supposed to call that drink. It's like, I feel like it's a TikTok thing that I'm not aware of, but Dakota Kai looked like she was tearing her hair out and saying something like, why? So it seemed like that was the beginning of whatever the next phase of her NXT run is going to be. It might be a reach, but that little bit did stand out to me as, you know, maybe we'll find out whatever that was hinting at when she wrestles Wendy Chu and maybe beats her. I think that's inside the realm of possibility here. But as for the match we did see, I actually liked a Saray match for the first time ever, and I liked it because of Saray. It would have been easy to say, well, I liked it because Dakota Kai was 50% of it, but no, it was specifically how Saray was actually firing up and actually seeming like she was creating more of a genuine fire and connection with the audience, which was what I criticized her for going through the motions of before. So, you know, she's gone through, honestly, what is a rather minor character tweak here, and it was widely criticized by everyone before we really knew what it was going to be, and there's still more to play out, I'm sure. There I go, I say play out when everybody hates that phrase on Twitter now, but hey, I actually liked the Saray match, so progress.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think Saray's finally kind of coming into her own. You know, this character tweak, I think she finally, you know, feels comfortable with it. It's odd. It's a weird gimmick. I don't know. I'm not sold on it, but like I kind of want to be, because I want to kind of like Saray. I feel like she had a fantastic match here tonight. But yeah, like I said, the gimmick itself, in the ring, when she, you know, is this, what do they call her, the Warrior of the Sun? You know, when she's kind of in that mode, like, yeah, she's great. But then you get backstage and she's dressed like a schoolgirl with this like giant charm around her neck that, you know, looks very cheap, and very cheap glowy LED inside that apparently is like some heirloom that her grandmother gave her or whatever. It's a little hokey. It's a little weird. It's certainly not the most hokey thing WWE has ever done. I mean, you know, Boogeyman, for Christ's sake. But it's one of those suspend your disbelief type of a deal. We're seeing that more and more with NXT kind of going back to these real gimmick-based wrestlers, gimmick-based characters, rather. I'm going to give it a few more weeks before I kind of pass judgment on it, I think. So far, I want to like the gimmick, and I think I do, but there's just that hokiness about it. And I've talked about this in the past. I mean, when the zombies showed up, you know, a couple, what was it, almost, you know, 2 years ago at this point, I think, when the zombies showed up in NXT, you know, there's a time and a place for hokiness in wrestling. I don't feel like NXT is really that place, but I guess here we are. But overall, I am impressed with Saray.
in this match in particular. Even the last week. Yeah, last week was her debut of this new character. Even last week, she looked good. But yeah, I certainly think she's come quite a long way from kind of that generic babyface Saraya that we saw when she first debuted. There was a lot of fanfare around her debut, and I feel like it really fell flat once she actually did debut. I was glad to see that they kind of kept her off TV for a little while. I forgot about her entirely until we started seeing those vignettes. And then, yeah, I'm glad to see her kind of come back and have a character that she can feel comfortable with and latch onto, and finally connect with the crowd. So all good for me there. Let's go ahead. So we kind of touched on all the matches. So we've got quite a few staged things that happened here tonight. We've talked about some of them. So I guess the first thing we'll talk about here is, I'm curious to know what you think of what you think's going on with Indy Hartwell and Duke Hudson. We saw earlier in the night, Duke Hudson was getting asked about his match and his current feud. And he eventually just kind of looked at the camera and wished Indy Hartwell luck in her match, for the Dusty Classic. Didn't wish Persia luck, just Indy Hartwell. We also saw Indy Hartwell backstage a little bit later on, presumably talking to Dexter Loomis on the phone, her husband, talking about taking a hot tub later and things like that. When Persia Parada came by and asked who she was talking with, assuming it was Duke Hudson, and he's like, why would it be Duke Hudson? I'm married to Dexter. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. Is this going to wind up with a Duke Hudson versus Dexter Loomis feud? Are we going to see a little bit of a stalker angle coming out of Duke Hudson? Which I think he could probably play pretty well now that I think about it. But yeah, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on this angle.
Yeah, I wish I had something more concrete for you. Until Duke said what he said, I thought it was humorous that he was involved in a storyline that he wasn't actually involved in. And I did have to force my mind past the fact that that Indy and Duke have been friends in real life for years. So like when they show the picture, like, well, what's this of you two together at an arena or whatever that picture was of, I just think like, oh, I probably saw when they posted that on Instagram, like, and I have to force myself back into the kayfabe world here. But yeah, it does seem to me like it is, simultaneously developing the character of Persia Parada while also leading to a Dexter Duke feud, which hopefully will be entertaining. I guess maybe it's just too much on the fanboy side of things, but I think I believe in Index enough to believe that there's absolutely no foundation in an indie Duke relationship.
It helps if I unmute myself before I talk. And if there is, Beth Phoenix better come back to kick Indy Hartwell's ass for cheating on Dexter.
That would be great.
It would be awesome. no, I believe in Index myself. I believe in Index myself. All right, let's go to the segment with Brooks Jensen. Brooks Jensen. I'm going to do that for the entire time. They are a tag team, I think. Brooks and Jensen and Casey Carter and Caden Wow, I screwed there. I screwed up all these names here. Holy crap!
I think you actually got it right the first time. Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs. So it's Brooks. Yeah, I think you got it right the first time, right?
Maybe I did. I wrote down Brooks and Jensen. So.
Okay. I got. Yeah, I hear.
My God,
they did it to themselves.
I know they really did. It's terrible naming. Josh Briggs and Brooks Jensen. That's their names. I'm never going to remember it. Casey Carter and Casey Catanzaro backstage. It looks like, obviously they've been trying to pursue Casey and Caden for a number of weeks now. I hate this angle. Absolutely hate this angle. the two guys just, I wrote in my notes, not in the hits and misses, but I take some notes if I know I'm going to be hosting the show. In my notes, I wrote down Briggs and Jensen are literally 15-year-old idiots, because that's how they came off here. It's just, you know, 15-year-old guys chasing the chicks and having no idea what the hell they're doing. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say about it. It's just one of the last things to talk about. Anything on that segment, Tom?
What can I say? I think it's cute. I am invested.
Really?
I am. It's not so much like, oh, I want to see them together. It's just I think it's adorable seeing this Brooks character not know how to. I mean, it is. It's total middle school. It's just, I don't know. I'm enjoying it, and I think everyone involved is portraying their roles aptly.
All right, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. All right, and we had a couple other things. Oh, the one other thing I just want to mention that we had a couple other things like Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes. They had a backstage or a vignette at a barbershop. Kind of talk about Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes had a bit of a vignette talking about how he'd give up all his money, fortune, and fame to be the North American champion. He'd even go back to the trailer park if he had to. So those are a couple
so
things.
So he can put his North American championship on the mantle in his trailer because trailers have mantles.
Yes. You know, I didn't even and it didn't even dawn on me when he said that. I just, yeah, he put the championship in his trailer. All right. So yeah, those are a couple things. I don't really have much to say on those. Do you, Tom?
Not on either of those. I hope they don't return to the barbershop thing for Trick and Hayes, because it seemed like the exact same production value that went to the MSK Shaman vignettes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. I just don't want to see Marty Jannetty throw himself through a window again either. Just saying.
Oh God.
And the last thing that I want to touch on, because you were the one that smarted, I think Kelly and I up to this last week, is Nikita Lyons. She actually is a musician and she actually has music on Spotify, which Tom and I have listened to. It was just about as bad as her promo last week. Now, you know, I don't necessarily want to shit on anybody's art and whatnot, because, you know, it's art. It's a way to express yourself and whatnot. I really don't want to be doing that. But, God, I don't feel like this is the right character for her. Maybe things will be different when we hit the ring. But not only is just – I feel like the character – bad. And I feel like it's kind of a ripoff a little bit of, of Swerve's character. I mean, we got rid of a musician. Now we got a worse one. The music just not good. Her promo, like her talking tonight in that vignette, it was just, she didn't seem enthusiastic. She just kind of seemed like she's just a normal person talking. Right. Didn't seem like she really had any gusto behind what she was saying, if you catch my drift. I'm not sold on her at all. I am not looking forward to her debut at all. I don't think these segments have done anything to paint her in a good light. The only saving grace that I can find with these Nikita Lyons vignettes is that perhaps they took the Lash Legend spot, because we haven't seen that in a long time. Tom?
That is true. So last week I listened to you guys bash the Nikita Lyons vignette on the podcast before watching it myself, and I thought, okay, how bad could it have been, really? She was all right on 205 Live, and, you know, even though she comes off like an Instagram model who hasn't made it, who hasn't broken through into the algorithm yet on social media, she at least does post, well, the outfit that she wears, and she wore it in her match as well. The outfit is an odd choice, but she posts these training videos that are pretty impressive. Yeah, sure, training, very different than actually working a match or cutting a promo or anything. But I had my eye on it, so how bad could it really have been? And then I watched it, and oh my God, I can't believe they aired it. I can't,
right?
You know,
it was awful.
Like how many takes did they do of the singing? And
one, and
that was the best that they could do with it. They didn't try to. It's like, okay, we're going to criticize that you auto-tuned it, but auto-tune it. Like, what? So I agree with you that even if this is her real life story that she's telling, this is not the wrestling character she should be going with, at least to the way that they're presenting it. And tonight, I don't think we got any singing tonight, but she did say, like, I can do it all. I can sing and I can kick ass. And it's like, well, I already don't believe you because you showed us that you cannot sing. And just to be fair or to be nice or, I don't know, to be forgiving where I don't need to be forgiving. Oh, and I pulled up her her 205 match against Erica Yan, and it's not – I didn't think it was good before, but it's definitely not – oh, dear. There are things that I did not remember about it from the first time I watched it.
Are you watching it right now?
Yeah, it's pretty rough. They keep on going for the same spot over and over again, and Lyons looks pretty gassed, and she's clumsy. She's clumsy. This all sounds so mean. I mean, this is – the Raw – do I want to call it Raw? The I could see signing someone like this and training them. That's what the Performance Center is for. But putting her on TV at this point, I mean, this is what 2.0 and 205 have been doing. Oh boy, that looked, I just saw the finish and yeah, no. Oh boy. How did I not notice that the first time I watched that match? I must've had my eye on my phone or something, but, yeah, this all sounds so very mean, so I will soften it by saying that when I listened to the two songs that she has available for streaming, I thought that one of them was inoffensive. One of them I could only tolerate 20 seconds of, and I had to turn it off. The other one I listened to, okay, I would be lying if I said the whole thing, but I listened to the majority of it, and I was like, all right, it kind of reminds me of when Paris Hilton released an album, and it was like, you know what? It wasn't terrible. You get a pass, I guess, because it could have made my ears bleed and it didn't. So yeah, like I don't know. I always end up in these situations, like with Dana Brooke. I guess that's sort of my go-to with these sorts of things. I thought Dana Brooke was just repulsive at the beginning, and I couldn't believe that they had signed her and that they were putting her on TV. And then all of a sudden, it clicked, and I really liked what Dana Brooke did with the rest of her NXT run. So hopefully, it clicks for Nikita.
Yeah, I had to pull up the match myself, and yeah, this is some clunky stuff going on here.
Yeah, they keep on going for the exact same move over and over again, and it's just
yeah. And then like the rollover, the kind of rollover, grab the legs, pin thing that they've gone to I think three times now.
Yep.
Yeah, and you're right. Her and you did send me a picture of her attire. I think it was last week, but. Looking at it now, like actually, you know, in motion, because it's not a picture, it's a video. All I'm thinking is, wow, is she in a Faraday cage? Like, it just looks like it's like this copper mesh, weird, weird choice of attire.
Sort of looks like temporary fencing you see around a construction site.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That temporary orange fencing. Like, it's just it's not quite as orange in her attire here. Yeah, I don't feel like they're doing her they're not doing her any service here by kind of keeping her with this gimmick. I don't want to be mean. I really don't. I try not to be. But yeah, after these two vignettes and now seeing this match here, I mean, I'm kind of, it's only a 3-minute match, but I'm skipping around a little bit simply because, hey, I'm talking with you guys. But I'm surprised she's actually getting as much airtime right now as she is with these vignettes. They're short vignettes, but airtime's airtime, and they could be giving me a little bit more about the Creed brothers or about Idris Enofe and Malik Blade. I want to learn a little bit more about them. They could be doing something like that, but instead they're giving us some very mediocre Instagram model singing. Yeah, that's weird. Well, I guess that's a weird note to end the show on, but I think that's what we're going to do. So unless there was anything else that I seem to have missed, Tom, was there?
No, quick scroll. Yeah, no. You hit all of it.
Yeah, I think we hit everything.
Oh,
well,
okay. I'm obligated to mention that Ulysses León showed up, but nothing else was notable about that particular segment.
That's true. They did show up, her and Valentina Feroz. That's true. All right. So with that, guys, this is the end of our show. I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to. And if you are interested in role-playing games and the way that you could use them in a therapeutic manner, give us a follow over at YouTube at DegeTime, DegeTime, where my buddies and I take a bit of a closer look at the therapeutic benefits of role-playing games. And speaking of role-playing games, I'm sure Tom would like to talk about his.
Yes, indeed. Of course, I am at Tom Stoup on Twitter. And at Tom Stoup on Twitter is where you can find all the links to my various things, two things of which are the podcasts that drop on Saturday. NXT 8 years back, which is what it sounds like on PW Torch VIP. In addition to some movie discussion that we always throw in at the end, this Saturday we will be talking about the films of one Gene Hackman. And also on Saturdays is when Willing Creatures drops. If you've been listening, you know that Willing Creatures is my actual play D&D podcast with an ongoing story, although this Saturday is a one-shot where we break the conventions of the game to play as level 25 characters, functionally immortal characters. And in this particular instance, the Dungeon Master is testing that functional immortality. He really wants to see if he can manage to kill some level 25 characters. So it is a self-contained story. And if you are paying attention to the overarching story, this self-contained story does, it takes place in a different place and time, but it does have ripple effects that affect the narrative of the overarching tale.
Level 25. That's interesting. That is interesting.
Yeah, I hesitated to say it because I didn't want to make it seem like it was connected to something we did that wasn't recorded. But a couple of years ago, we did create and play a different one shot as these characters. And oh man, it was so fun. To that point, I think. Yeah, that was only the second Dungeons & Dragons character I had ever played, because prior to that, I had only ever been a rogue, and I had not, if anybody's listened to it, you know that my human, you know, relatively mundane human rogue character has gone down a dark magical path, but this had not happened yet, and the character, I'll keep a long story as short as I can and say that the character I picked for my level 25 is a homebrew version of a druid. And so I had basically every single druid spell plus a couple of homebrew things at my disposal. And it was a ton to wrap my mind around. But, I mean, you feel powerful. Like, when you can cast Wish if you want to, you feel powerful.
Oh yeah, for sure. No, that's I'm probably gonna check that out, because like level 20 is the cap, right? Level 25,
yeah.
You were like functionally gods at that point. Like that's
yep.
Awesome. That's awesome. All right, well, that's enough of RPG talking on a wrestling podcast. So with that, you know what? I'm gonna steal Kelly's line. We'll see you in 7.